This is Holding Court with Patrick McEnroe. Patrick serves up the hardest-hitting podcast in tennis with news, politics, and insights you won't find anywhere else. Here's Patrick McEnroe.
All right, welcome everyone. It's season four of Holding Court, and we're kicking things off in exactly the right way with a guest who's been on with me before. He's an expert on all things China, the movie business, as well as he's been part of producing many, many movies, 23 films, in fact, grossing over $2 billion worldwide, including the latest Iron Man, Iron Man 3. He is Chris Fenton. He's been with me before to discuss all things China. Chris, welcome back. I think the last time we spoke, you were with your family freezing your you-know-what off in New York City on a little trip, but now you're in cozy Southern California. Welcome back to Holding Court.
Yeah, it's great to be back on, and congrats on a fourth season. It's awesome. And yeah, quite frankly, I think it was Thanksgiving of 2021. The Peng Shui incident was in sort of full blossom as far as everybody paying attention to it. And I remember doing your show from outside the Tribeca Grand Hotel in, I think, 20-degree weather. It was freezing cold, but it was too loud inside, so I had to go out there. And by the way, watching your following grow since then just shows that you're really hitting a very good, strong, broad topic that sort of spreads out from the sports industry and from the game that you follow so closely, tennis, because there's so many interesting nuances that spread into so many other areas.
Well, you are an expert on all those things, and thank you. I mean, you've been involved in U.S.-China policy through your work with the U.S.-Asia Institute. You have a lifetime membership in the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations and Council on Foreign Relations. So you know all, and I always appreciate reaching out to you when issues do come up. And obviously, the Peng Shui situation, I want to get back into with you because, as you said, it was at the forefront. It's not anymore. I want to get your reaction to that. But first, before we get into the sports, I want to talk just about Balloon Gate. When you first heard about that, Chris, were you surprised?
Well, no, I definitely wasn't surprised. I mean, obviously, we know there's spying going on between many nations, in particular the two superpowers. So that's obviously ongoing. I mean, my focus on it is really taking what's a tangible story and trying to use that to get more people invested in the challenge that China is on the United States and the rest of the West. As far as being an expert in sort of what has happened in the past with the balloons and what's been going on specifically in spying, we know it's happening. I've been reading the same stuff you guys have. I do believe it's probably been a regular occurrence. It's hard to understand whether we're being told about this stuff happening because we're forced to, or because they actually feel like, hey, this is the first time it's happened, we got to know. My guess is that it's happening on a relatively regular basis. And quite frankly, it probably is, because why would China do it at such a pivotal moment before Antony Blinken heads over there to China? I mean, in a way, you'd like to believe that maybe this just happens all the time and this just happened to get discovered and brought to life in the press and it's now damaged this whole visit. Unfortunately, every day I wake up and I go, wow, this is the worst I've seen the China-U.S. relationship, at least in my lifetime. I mean, remember, we did have a complete frozen relationship prior to 1971, which was about as bad as it gets, before some sort of kinetic warfare. This is definitely the worst I've seen in my life. And every day I wake up going, wow, it just got a little worse. So I think there's a massive need for a dramatic, drastic rebalancing of the relationship between the two countries. We've been playing on this very uneven playing field that favors China for a very long time. And it's time to drastically but constructively rebalance it. What we don't want is war, and what we don't want also is complete non-communication between the highest levels of government. That just leads to what a lot of people refer to as the Thucydides trap, which is some event will occur, there's no communication, and it just spirals into some sort of kinetic conflict.
Well, you talk about it in your book, Feeding the Dragon, by the way, which is a great read, came out a couple of years ago. And you talk about Fenton's five forces of diplomacy in your book. So what forces are those five forces, and how are they at work right now?
Well, you have national security, human rights, and politics, which are five of the forces that tend to bond countries, three of the five forces that tend to bond countries, sort of like three pillars of a cell phone to cell tower type of connection. We obviously have no agreement on any of those three. So it really comes down to culture and commerce. Commerce, as we know, is a transactional trade activity that bonds nations. But what's more important is if you can create that second sort of bar on your connection, which is the cultural exchange, which is something that we've seen in the world of sports. Even a year ago, there was actually the Winter Olympics that happened over there in Beijing. Obviously, the WTA and men's tennis have had a long relationship with China. The NBA, which is something that I cover very closely in the book, does too. And when you look at the relationship between these two superpowers, in a way, I look at the China challenge as something that can actually bring together the United States of America, right? I mean, I'm wearing a Miracosta lacrosse sweatshirt today as a shout out to my son who plays lacrosse, and I got a cheer dad hat behind me. My daughter is a cheerleader. They rise up as a team when they play very tough rivals. It brings all those differences that all those kids have together to try to form a strategy and execute it on the field or whatever competition they have when they're playing their rival. That's something we need to do now with China. We need to get red, blue, purple, everybody from all walks of life behind this challenge, come up with solutions and create a leverage that allows us to win what is going to be a competition for the next century.
I guess the way to find that balance, right, between the commerce, the competition between athletes and being between countries, as we see in the Olympic Games, and then the culture. It seems to me the culture side of it is obviously the most challenging because the Chinese government, they don't want their citizens or 1.4 billion people to have the same kind of opportunities, I guess would be the word, that we have in the United States. At the same time, we know as U.S. citizens, we're beholden to China from a commerce standpoint so much. And then, you know, whether it's the movies, which obviously is your background, and the big, you know, you actually were there in China years ago producing movies on site. How has that changed? We know what's happened in the NBA. We know Daryl Morey, who was the former GM of the Rockets, and the controversy that entailed. But where does it stand now? Because, I mean, I've been watching it. I mean, let's get into the sports side. We'll get into Peng Shui a little bit later. But from the standpoint of the Olympic Games, you know, and the controversies that entail there, what's the right path forward so that there can be these competitive in situations that this country, you know, China, the biggest country in the world, can participate, but not kind of lose the balance, right, that you're talking about, which in the past has favored China, right?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, or fortunately, there's always compromise in any sort of relationship. And if you look at the things that are compromising or adjusting and weakening the foundation of this country, China is really pushing the limits. They're really testing us on our principles, our values, our free speech rights, etc. So when you look at the engagement that we have with them, I love the idea of having cultural engagement. I love the fact that they can see what they consider Western propaganda from the Hollywood studios in their theaters. I love the idea of our athletes going over there or their athletes coming here and competing against us on world stages. Those are fantastic opportunities for diplomatic camaraderie and competition, right? Where it gets muddied is when China tries to enforce the kind of system, the kind of rules, the kind of laws that they want their own people to have on us. And what I mean by that is if you look at Daryl Morey, who you bring up, the GM of the Houston Rockets, who now is working with the Philadelphia 76ers, he tweeted seven words, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong," while he was on some sort of a trip to Japan. That was not done in China. That was done in Japan, in the free world. But what China said, what Beijing said, was that is not acceptable to essentially bifurcate Hong Kong from China. What China was doing with Hong Kong, those protests were wrong, et cetera, et cetera. Don't stand with the people of China fight or of Hong Kong fighting for democracy. That's wrong. That's really wrong in so many manners to us and to Daryl Morey too, because Daryl Morey was not inside China tweeting that out. He was outside of China, and he should have every right that's protected in whatever that country and sovereign nation is at the point where he does that. And China said, no, you don't. You need to follow what our narrative is. And because you didn't, NBA, you're going to get penalized because that one guy is the GM of the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets have a big following in China. We're now going to tell all the sponsors of the NBA that they can no longer sponsor the NBA. We're going to tell the platforms that are airing NBA games that they can't air NBA games anymore. And we're going to do this until you guys apologize, you grovel, you do everything in your power to make that wrong a right in Beijing's viewpoint. Now, what was great about that is that it created all kinds of controversy in the West. And the West looked at that and said, how dare you, Beijing? But the problem is the money's so big. That carrot that's dangled with that China market is so large that it's very hard to do the right thing. And for any one person that does the right thing, somebody that's willing to do the wrong thing for a buck can come in and take their place.
You're listening to Holding Court, everyone. Chris Fenton joining me. He's a great follow, by the way, on Twitter. I follow him and learn a lot. It's The Dragon Feeder. That's your handle, right? Because it's Feeding the Dragon, the name of the book. And your Twitter handle is The Dragon Feeder, correct, Chris?
Yeah, The Dragon Feeder is something that sort of motivates me. Until I can figure out
yep.
how to get everybody on board with righting the playing field between the U.S. and China, I'm going to consider myself a dragon feeder because I'm part of the reason we got into this mess. But once we get to that place, which I do have hope we will, I'm going to have to change that handle. But one of the things about my Twitter is that I am not one of these bloviating China experts. I consider myself like the Michael Keaton in Gung Ho. I fell into China for 20 years. I learned it on the fly. I was a fish out of water. And that's the way I approach the subject. And I try to be as approachable about it to everybody possible.
Well, you definitely are. And I want to take a quick break here. We come back. I want to get into it with Chris about sports specifically. Where's the NBA at? Where's the WTA at? The ATP Tour as well on Peng Shui. We'll get back into it with Chris Fenton after this quick break. North Organic CBD is a new sponsor of Holding Court. I love their CBD gummies. They come in two delicious flavors, strawberry lemonade and green apple. I've had them both amazing. One a day and you're totally okay. I like to stay active. I like to keep playing tennis. I like to get in the gym. That's why I love North Organic CBD. Their products are made in the USA. They're high quality. They're specially formulated broad spectrum organic CBD products for everyday adventurers. Don't forget about the very popular CBD salve from North Organics. Immediate relief of any physical pain. I use it daily for my sore shoulders, sore knees, hips, you name it. It works wonders. Go to NorthOrganicCBD.com and enter Patrick20, that's Patrick20, for 20% off your order. All right, welcome back, everyone. Holding Court, round two here with Chris Fenton. He, of course, is the author of Feeding the Dragon and knows many things about China that we're learning about every time we have him on here on the podcast. So thanks again to Chris for joining us yet again. All right, let's get into the sports specifically. You've covered the NBA for a long time and their issues. We've touched on them already thus far. The WTA Tour, they haven't groveled the way you suggested, Chris, that the NBA certainly backed down in the last couple of years. The money in China is just so huge. But the WTA, to their credit, have not backed down, at least that we know of. They've decided not to go and continue to play in China, of course, with the COVID shutdowns. There's been no tournaments there anyway the last couple of years. So let me just start with a basic question to you first, Chris. When do you think that professional sports, let's assume, forget the conflicts, the culture, et cetera, but just the COVID issues, when do you think it would open up so that it would be possible for big-time sports to go back into China? Let's start with that.
Well, I think it's always possible, as we saw with the Winter Olympics, which happened a year ago, which is sort of unbelievable when you think of the COVID outbreak that they had over the past few months. So if China really wants to put it on, they'll figure it out. The question is like, what kind of message of what those events are, what they're for, the whole symbolism behind them? Is that something that the West is going to want to support? My guess is if the NBA was invited over to play exhibition games and, you know, there was an opportunity for all the players to go over there and market their brands and their image and likeness, I'm sure you would have a lot of people wanting to go do that. It's just a huge market and it's hard to turn away from that money. That said, I do think there's a real interesting story in the WTA, and I would ask you maybe to have a couple of the key members on from the WTA again, and ask them specifically whether, I call it the Muhammad Ali effect, took place when the WTA took a stand. Because I will tell you, as somebody that's in the entertainment business, understands marketing and brands, their awareness among consumers was elevated dramatically when they took that stand in regards to Peng Shuai. People that never paid attention to women's tennis suddenly were like, wow, here is an entity, here is a sports governing body that finally took the stand that I wanted them to take. And I know short term, there were events, there were all kinds of sponsorships that went away. But I'm curious whether it was replaced by other entities in the West, other events, other brands, et cetera, where actually this Muhammad Ali effect, where they did the right thing, actually created them into an even bigger business because they went beyond the sport itself.
Well, that's a great point. You know, I've had Steve Simon on, who's the CEO of the WTA. So I had him on sort of middle of last year. But it's a great question. If I were just to answer it just with my own knowledge, I would say they have gotten other sponsors. They did sign a big, I think it's Hologic. It's a women's health company, I believe, to be the title sponsor of the tour. And I think that happened in part, their interest, because of the stand they took on China. That being said, I think overall, thus far, in the short term, it's been a money loser probably for the WTA, because they have to play the year-end championships, which were supposed to be in China at the end of each year. You know, they played them in Mexico one year. They played them in Fort Worth, and the crowds were not very good. You know, they didn't have a lot of time to sell it, a lot of market to market, and so on. So I think on balance, I would say they definitely made the right call, and they're probably hoping that in the long term that it'll be a payoff. And certainly women's tennis in the majors is been a very successful. In fact, the numbers at the Australian Open were higher for the women's final than they were for the men's final, both in Australia and even here in the United States. So I think it's sort of a catch 22, because I think that overall they would say they've probably lost money, but maybe in the long run, they're hoping that that turns around. I guess my question is, do you think that they ever go back, Chris, within the, you know, again, let's assume the COVID restrictions are lessened, or that China's willing, you know, to have these events, who's going to budge, you know, or is it a negotiation that's going on right now that we don't know about?
Well, I think, look, it's money's going to dictate everything. And the greatest story, and it might be a pipe dream, would be to hear that the WTA actually benefited financially from taking that stand. I do think in the long run, they will. But one of the things that also is happening with companies is that if they don't take the right stand, there's a lot more scrutiny from consumers, from journalists, from politicians that are now noticing when a kowtowing to Beijing occurs, or some sort of placating the Chinese government is done by a particular company. And that's starting to have a negative effect on consumers' wallets, right? So if you have the WTA benefit, say, close to breaking even, but then on top of it, what they might have lost by placating Beijing is factored in there, maybe you see a net positive of what they do. And there would be nothing better than if we could get capitalism to reward doing the right thing, right? That's really what needs to happen. That either has to happen, or we need to have a blanket policy of how we're approaching China so that we're not in a whack-a-mole kind of situation, right? You want LeBron James, for instance, we're talking about engagement or going back to China. if LeBron James goes back to China, everybody will be like, I can't believe he's going over there. He's doing this. It's crazy. But the fact is, if he doesn't do it, then he'll lose certain sponsorships or whatever it is, and somebody else will take his place. So you suddenly have this whack-a-mole that never ends and nothing gets accomplished. So in a way, you have to say, here's how we're going to engage with this country. Here's what is good under the laws and policy and regulations of the United States of America. And here's the right thing to do as a patriot of the country, right? And we want everybody to apply those rules when they look at how they're going to engage China. It's not about shutting off China, but it's about doing the right thing. So I'll take it back to movies. And I know I'm not exactly answering your question, but I do think the direct answer is when the money's there. When the money's there,
right,
and people feel comfortable about going back, they will. There's no doubt, right? We've just seen it repeated over and over. But we have seen WTA-like stands occur also that give me a little hope, right? Like Sony had that last Spider-Man movie, and you know, the Chinese government was like, hey, we'll let you have access to our consumers. We'll let it in for theaters, but you need to cut out the Statue of Liberty backdrop in the third act. And Sony said,
right,
you know,
right,
screw you, right? And I would argue, just watching people talk about that story, they gained fans. They gained box office by people going, oh, I love that story. I'm going to go see that movie, even though I wasn't thinking about it. Now, mm-hmm, I wouldn't say that balanced out what they lost in China by placating Beijing, but it's another great sign of hope that people are pushing back.
Well, I love your optimism because you're right. I mean, it's the only way forward. So before I let you go, Chris, and I appreciate you coming back on with me and giving us so much time here on Holding Court. Peng Shui, you know, I'm wondering how she is. I mean, we haven't heard from her. What is your assessment of how she's doing? I mean, none of us really know. I'm assuming she's living, I would guess, a quiet life in Beijing. But what's your overall feel of just how that's played out? You know, the first thing you said to me in the start of our conversation today was, you know, people aren't covering it as much as they were. We all know about the news cycle and how things, you know, move on quickly. But what's your assessment right now of how she's doing? And I guess my sense of the whole situation is, I feel like, well, China won.
Well, they did win, other than the fact that they didn't get the WTA to follow the rule book, which is a nice little loss too in there. But you could say that was a battle they lost, but in the war, they won because they brought her out on the world stage for the Beijing Olympics, right? That was a year ago.
Right.
So they're using her in a very symbolic way when they feel like it's of value. What's concerning to me is that we really haven't had any sort of public sightings of her recently. And if I just use circumstantial evidence to say what my gut feels, is my gut feels like this is not a good situation. Because Jack Ma, for instance, was sort of in the same boat. And we've seen Jack Ma not only in China doing things publicly, but he's actually out of China right now. And, you know, he seems to have more freedoms than Peng Shui does right now. And that's concerning to me because I'd like to believe that she's sort of in the same boat coming out the other side of this.
Do you think we'll see professional tennis back in China by 2025?
Well, if you take COVID out of it, I would say 100%.
Okay.
I think the best case scenario in terms of what we're talking about, like, is there a way to engage with China while also protecting our values, principles, and ideals that make us part of the West? I think there would be some sort of an agreement made between the different associations saying, hey, while we're on the ground in China, we're going to be the dinner guest, you know, that eats the meatloaf and pretends like they like it. But when we leave, we're allowed to say whatever we want in the free world about that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You, China, are able to block anything we say from anybody inside of China hearing it. So you should have no problem with that. But if we're going to engage with you properly, you need to respect our independence and what we're allowed to do outside of your borders. And we'll compromise and respect yours inside your borders. I think that's the best case scenario. I know I would love to say they should be able to protest in the middle of Tiananmen Square if they like to.
Right.
But, you know, that's sort of pushing it to the point where I don't know if it's practical and it's going to solve anything.
Well, you know what? You're reasonable and rational, which is why I continue to reach out to you and get you to come on my podcast. So I appreciate it, Chris. Remember, Feeding the Dragon is his book. You got to check it out. And the Dragon Feeder on Twitter is his handle. So please check him out. I appreciate it. I'm coming out to California, by the way, Chris, in a couple of weeks with my daughter. We're going to visit some colleges. So I'm gonna look you up. And I hope you'll be there because I know some of your kids are on the road with their sports too.
Well, I would love to see it. Love to host you down in Manhattan Beach. It's fantastic. We have a lot of WTA players that actually live in town here. And I'd love to give a shout out to our tennis coach at the high school, Alan Yap, who won CIF for boys tennis, which was fantastic. And we're just big tennis fans out here. I try to play at a decent old dad level. My daughter loves it. And we're just big fans. And keep doing what you're doing. It's fantastic. It's engaging. It's entertainment. But then on top of it, every podcast I listen to, I learn something great. So thank you.
I appreciate you coming on again. And I'm feeling your pain with as far as the old dad tennis player goes. I'm right there with you.
Take care, Patrick.
Take care. Chris Fenton, everyone, on Holding Court. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to and share Holding Court.
Holding Court is powered by Mudhouse Media.